Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly, and I'm coming to you live from the Rory Groves Farm in Minnesota. We were here for their Gather and Grow weekend, and I'm going to have a couple interviews today, just brief ones with Rory Groves and his wife, Becca, talking about some of the things they're encouraging people in homesteading and being prepared and things like that. It's really been a fun weekend and learned an awful lot. I'll cover some of that and some news stories this week, but thank you so much for joining me. Those watching on Rumble, please like and follow to help the video get out to more people. And those that are not subscribers, please consider going to agendaweekly.com where you can sign up there and get all the things that we offer each month. It's only $5 for a month, and I think you'll really enjoy that. But thank you for joining me today. We are continuing in our travels, and we're in Iowa now speaking at a family camp. But I wanted to tell you a few updates to some things I saw this week that were important. We talked about this a couple years ago, but I said, I think from these lockdowns, there's going to be far more death than from COVID itself. The total deaths worldwide from COVID have been 7 million people. And of course, 90% of those could have been avoided if they'd have been given ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, and things like that. If they wouldn't have put people on ventilators, and on it goes. So really only about 10%, probably about 700,000 people worldwide died of COVID itself, which is a typical flu season. So it was just like a bad flu. But the UN now says that they estimate that 80 million people have died as a result of the lockdowns. 80 million. It's so typical. Their solution always makes the problem far worse. It's just always been that way. Also this week, of course, as you've heard, a new COVID shot is coming out. Of course, I wouldn't recommend you getting that, in my opinion. But so far, there's been 13.5 billion doses of the other vaccine given. 13.5 billion doses. Just think about all the injuries, infertility, miscarriages. It's crazy. It's so sad. Below, I want to tell you about a video we have by Mike Lindell. If you haven't seen it, just kind of in a brief summary form, going through a lot of the voter fraud from 2020 and just showing clearly how crazy it was and how corrupt to the core. Once you watch that, please share it with everyone you know. There's also a Google video below, and they have now decided for all of us that individual people no longer have freedom of speech. And my first reaction was, who cares what you think? But then I thought, wait a minute. When you control the internet, which is how we communicate with each other, and they will simply, like they talk in the video, they say, we're going to make it where they can't find content that is not speaking what we believe to be true, what's true from our point of view. So make sure you start using, if you haven't already, Brave Browser. That is one that is not doing all that. When they search the internet, it's giving you all of the options available. But please keep us in your prayers as we travel and try to influence and encourage others to stand up and to do the things God's asked us to do. But I hope you enjoy these interviews, and I'll add in a few more nuggets from one of the speakers who's Amish, and he didn't want to be on the camera because of that. So I took notes of a few key things he said that I thought were really insightful. Rory, tell me some of the things that you all were trying to teach this week and encourage people in.
Sure. Well, thanks. I appreciate you coming all the way up here to Minnesota from Alabama.
Yes.
And braving. It's not quite as cold this time of year, at least.
Very nice here. We left 98 degrees, so this feels great.
Okay, good. You feel right at home here. I think we got into the low 90s today. But so what we did this weekend is we had what's called the Grovestead Gathering. And this is something, our third time we've done this, and it's a conference about the family economy. And this is something that my wife and I, Becca, have felt very drawn to build up in our own family. We've heard others talk about it, and we really decided to make this a priority. Because in the end of the day, it's not just about what kind of prosperity we're creating for ourselves as a husband and wife, but what kind of economy are we creating for our family? In other words, What kind of things are we doing together as a family that can build our relationships, make us more productive, yes, make us more self-sufficient, maybe more prepared. Those are good things. I have no problem with that. But truly, how do I build that generational discipleship? So my, you know, my kids are not required to leave their family someday in order to find a vocation and to subsist, but they can be together with their families. I need to start that in my own family. And that's what a family economy is all about. And so this weekend was kind of our attempt to bring families together. We had about 150 people to the farm here and just on our property here. And we brought in a speaker. And what we do is we just explore some of these ideas. In this year, the theme was ancient paths. And that's from Jeremiah 6:16, where it says, "Stand at the crossroads and look and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is. And walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls." And I feel like there's a lot of paths, that a lot of crossroads, that we as a culture, we've departed from the ancient path. And has it brought rest to our souls, right? And we're so advanced, and we have so many conveniences and creature comforts, so much prosperity. No generation in history has been as prosperous as the American generation is today. But yet we're weary in our souls, right? Where is this going? We're burning ourselves out for what? And you go to the ancient paths, and we're told by the scriptures that we'll find rest for our souls. And but it says, they said, we will not walk in it. And so there's this whole tension there of, what is going on with the generations? Why do they not walk and persist in the faith of their fathers? And for us, we think a lot of it begins at home. We think a major aspect of that is that the fragmented family that gets pulled in many different directions, dads outside the home, and many families, moms outside the home, the kids are in daycare, or they're in public school, and even the kids, when they're in school, they're not even in the same classes with each other. Siblings are even separated. Nobody is together in the modern family. And so the family economy is, how do we bring back together the family? Because historically, we are an anomaly of history. Nobody used to live this way. The family was a self-sufficient unit. And so we wanted to look at, what are some of those ancient paths that God has for Christian families today to come back together and to really work together? And there's so many other benefits that can be had from that. Obviously, you're, like I said, you're gaining some modicum of self-sufficiency. You may be preparing for adversity, but really you're building up that generational wealth, that relational wealth. And so anyway, so for us, that's a calling that Beck and I have. And this is just one of the ways that we're trying to respond to that call, is by gathering like-minded families together to come to our farm, to talk about it, to encourage each other. And this year, we invited an acquaintance that we had made from an old order Amish community up in Mora, Minnesota. And he came down and he shared from his perspective some of the ancient paths that they walk. And this is a people now that they have been together for 400 to 500 years. They've been persisting in a way of life. They don't have electricity. They don't have any of the modern conveniences. You know, they don't have air conditioning. They don't have all the things that we think we need to have to live. And yet, they're happy people. Their kids are growing up. They're adopting the faith of their parents. They're passing on their faith to their children. And is there anything? So we brought them down just to teach us about homesteading, about farming, and about intentional community. And that's what the weekend kind of revolved around this past weekend.
Yeah, no, it was a great blessing, and that guest speaker, Robert, he was talking about so many different things that were, made you really think and go, that's true, we've drifted so far, but don't realize it. One of the things he said is all the time-saving devices that you buy to save yourself time, he goes, you're not saving yourself time because they cost so much money, it just takes you more hours at work to pay for them. So you're really using the time anyway, which I thought was really funny coming from an Amish person that was going, yeah, that's true. But he talks about work the way it used to be talked about. It's like a gift. Yeah. It's a blessing. It's a life, yeah, a life not working would be the misery. It would be, and Americans, we've so bought into the idea that the whole point of life is to work as hard as you can, as long as you can, so you can save up enough money so eventually you don't have to work at all.
Yeah.
Instead of spending my time, no, I'm going to work as hard as I can to find the thing God gifted me to do so I can do it with excellence and I will enjoy it and so I can be a blessing in that productivity to my family and those around. And what Roy was talking about too, that was so key, and I know it's the focus of your ministry, is, okay, so the man does need to provide, but why doesn't he try to provide with his children helping him and involved in whatever he is doing? And as many of you have heard me give my testimony of making agenda, that's just what it was. It was the first time God had given me a project that I couldn't do on my own. I realized, I can't make a movie. I've never done that before. I need help. And all of a sudden I looked around me, I saw I have 10 helpers and I haven't been using them at all. Yeah. And I need to. And so God had me start pulling them into my life. And now I look back and go, how did I ever get anything done before I allowed my family to be a blessing to me like they're supposed to be? And how could I have ever had a meaningful relationship with any of them if I was always gone, always busy working? We're like, hey, I don't got time. I'm too busy. So I'm grateful God got a hold of my heart 20 years ago to pull me in that direction. And I'm glad that he's doing that with you all. But then you're sharing that vision with others. One thing I want you to mention before we talk to your wife, Becca, because I know she has a woman's perspective, which is so vital. You said something this morning. Just talk about this for a minute. You said the Christian life is secure uncertainty. And I thought, that's exactly what it is. You're totally secure, but there's uncertainty all around you because God doesn't always show you the whole pathway. He wants us to live by faith. And just talk about that. Just a point that I'm going to hold on to.
That's good. I wasn't even premeditated. I was just trying to communicate what is this whole concept of walking by faith, is that you never know really where it's going to lead you. And there's a surrender in that to something higher than yourself, I think. And that isn't that kind of the pride at the heart of all of this, is that we want to be the gods of our own devising.
In control. Yeah.
Yeah. And so walking by faith automatically means that you're giving that up and that you're going to let someone else determine the course of your steps. Now, he does that anyway, whether you have the illusion of control or not. God orders our steps. But walking by faith means that you're taking some very scary steps sometimes. I mean, you're stepping out of the boat. Becca talked this weekend about what would that actually be like, to be Peter standing in the boat and Christ is calling you to step out and just envision yourself in that spot. But that's what a life of faith is, and it's what God requires of us. And this secure uncertainty is just, I guess I was just trying to say that you know that you can trust the one who's calling you, even if you don't know where you're going to land. There's a security in that because there's a protection in the life of faith. And as it pertains to us, I mean, going back to what you're saying on the family economy, we just felt, you know, there's so many ways that through a lot of the conveniences and the labor-saving devices and all of the technology and, you know, what we call great achievements of modern civilization, it's required us to approach work so differently than we used to. Work used to be live on a farm and grow the things you need and pass those skills on to your children. And that was a life, okay? Now, yeah, you didn't have cell phones, you didn't have cars, you didn't have airplanes and stuff like that. But in order to have all those things, we had to trade a way of life where the family used to be together, you used to have work ethic, you used to have values and morals that were rooted in the earth, which is a good teacher. If the law of the harvest, you reap what you sow. God's always eternally there. And so you take someone out of that and you put them in an urban context, or you take them out of the farm and put them in a factory. Or I think this is the big challenge for our day today is specialization. We have 30,000 plus, maybe 40,000 distinct occupations that someone they're coming out of college, let's say, and they're trying to choose they're going into college, they're trying to choose what career to go into. We're so specialized. You step back only 2 centuries, you had at most about 70 occupations total, because the purpose of work was to subsist off the land, and 90% of the population were farming. So The point being is that the only way to be a molecular biologist is you can't bring your kids into the work with you on that. They can't come to the lab with daddy all day and, you know, mom's squirting things in the eyedropper on the microscope and the kids are typing in genome sequences on the computer. It just can't work that way.
That's right.
The whole of society is constructed in such a way that everyone's specialized, and the only way to satisfy that requirement is for everyone to be separated. And so you can't have dads at home and with their families. And so with Robert, you know, he talked about the importance, the goal of every, well, I mean, I don't know how they set up their rules, but at least the goal of every family in every community is the father works at home. Father is with the children, and the children are with the fathers and the mothers, and they're working together and they're living together. And you know what? What he's saying is it's radical on one level, because you don't see it hardly ever anymore. But that's the normal way we used to live for most of human history.
Yeah.
That was always it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's just kind of like in a nutshell, what we're trying to look for ways, what are ways that families today can reclaim that ancient path, rebuild the family economy, which is what we want to try to do. Yeah. And how can we, you know, spur each other on, encourage each other towards that?
Yes. And as you are around people that are doing this more, walking this path, one thing I've noticed tremendously is they're such well-rounded people because they're not so specialized where they only have this one teeny microscopic area of life that they're good at or that they study and they spend all their time. They're so diverse. They make some very interesting people, just very well-rounded people that are able to do so many different things and be a blessing to so many different people in their skills. But I admire that because you can see they're not intimidated by anything because they've done a little bit of everything. And so they're just a balanced person, but that's been a blessing. Well, thank you, Roy. I appreciate letting us come and spending this time with you. And we really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me again. It's great to have you up here. Anytime, you're welcome back.
Thank you. We really had a great weekend with the Groves there in Minnesota. It was a lot of fun. But some of the things Robert said, who was the Amish man that had a lot of wisdom on things, he said, when you start relying on the government, they will start requiring things of you. He said, that's why we just don't use any government services. We don't get involved in anything the government is doing, education, anything else, hospitals, whatever, we just stay out of their system so they don't require anything of us, which was very wise counsel. And then he said, in building a community, one thing that is necessary is discipline has to be in place to create a healthy community. And of course, that goes for a country where you have to uphold the law and order for it to be a healthy community, or a family. There has to be rules, there has to be ways of doing things. And so I thought that was obvious, but so needs to be restated again today. And he says, you need your community to be big enough to be self-sufficient. When they create new Amish communities, he said, we always make sure as it grows to the right size, everything they need is inside of that community. And that's a wise thing to do as you're creating community right where you are with like-minded people. You want to keep growing your circle until you realize all the essentials are here. Everything we need to survive is inside of our circle. So we have direct access to everything that is necessary. He said, time equals relationships equals harmony. And it's so true. Whether it's a business, a community, a family, spending that time together helps you build healthy relationships. And when you have healthy relationships, it helps there be harmony in the community. And a lot of these were just simple little things he said, and he had so much great content, but I just wanted to share them with you. And he said this, which I think we can learn from. He calls us the English people. Amish call everyone that's not Amish English. And he said, when English people don't have time for their neighbors, they're too busy. And he goes, from our point of view, as we look around those that live around us, they seem too busy because they can't help their neighbors. They're running from thing to thing. He also said, deathbed wishes are never stuff, money, worldliness, accomplishments. He said, it's always, I wish I would have invested more in people, or influenced my own family or been more loving and kind to those around me and things like that. It's never, oh, I wish I had played one more game of golf, or I wish I would have bought one more new car. And he's right about that. We in America have bought into the lie that bigger is always better and more is always better. And so we have wasted a lot of our life, our time, which is our most precious resource, attaining those things only to be on our deathbeds going, everything I was spending my life doing was a complete waste of time. And just a couple more here. He said, many times small adjustments in life make a big difference. And I found that to be so true. A lot of times if you're having problems and things, just make a few adjustments. You don't have to revamp the whole thing, but make a few adjustments. And a lot of times that's what was needed to kind of help everything else fall in place. And then he said this, which Americans really need to hear. He said, from our perspective in our communities, we see wealth as a major threat to our Christian life. And I thought, isn't that funny? We think wealth, period, no matter what, just means blessing. But he said, no, you know, even in Proverbs, he prayed, you know, give me neither poverty nor riches. I don't want either one of those, because those poverty, I might steal something and then I'm breaking God's laws. But if I have riches, I might be prone to think, I don't need God. I've got everything I need myself. I'm in total control. And anyway, it was a very interesting perspective and some things that were something I'm going to be thinking about, but I wanted to share those with you. And now on to the interview with Becca Groves. I think you'll appreciate this. And then after her, I interview one of their sons, Ivor, who's only 12 years old. But I think you'll really enjoy that interview. It's neat to see what a homeschooled family that's being led by the father that has a vision for creating a family economy so he can spend time with his children, what kind of child that creates. He was a really sharp young man. But anyway, hope you enjoy this. Becca Groves, thank you so much for opening up your home to everybody this weekend and just so organizing things. I see the woman's touch in so many of the things that happen. One of the interesting things they had going on is a children's show and tell for other children, but where each child was getting up and talking about things they do to be productive in their home and to help out with the family economy. And they were kind of encouraging and inspiring other young kids with different ideas of things they do. But I thought that was a great idea. And I know you oversaw that. Tell me a little bit about that and just how that's affected you personally and in your homeschooling of your own children.
Yeah, it was so fun. It was, we started this last year and just invited kids to kind of share what they're doing to contribute towards their own family economy. So this year we had two brothers who they started up a little cookie bake shop, and they will make homemade cookies, and they're selling them. They said that we started selling them to our grandma first, and then once we got her approval on recipes, then we started telling neighbors and friends at church that we were selling homemade cookies. And I said to the kids gathered, I said, now listen, this is genius, because you cannot go to the store and buy a homemade cookie. Those are incongruent, right? And so these boys are on to something. There is another boy who's raising chicks into pullets. So you sell them just, you know, as the chicken is about to lay the egg. And he's got a good little venture going. And it was just really clever. There is a boy who does a lot of lawn service, and he said a lot of weed whipping and weeding for his neighbors that don't want to get on their knees any longer. And just really fun to hear kind of their own, you know, their own wheels spinning. And what was happening is everyone gathered, all the kids listening to this are kind of saying like, maybe we should, you know, Ivor shared about raising rabbits as pets, you know, and how cute the baby bunnies are. And I think we're going to have more baby bunnies in the world after his talk. So just really fun. And so many lessons there, too, that even are for the adults that like, you just try the thing. You see if it works. There is another boy there who last year he shared how he was selling bread at a farmer's market. And I said, how is that going? And he said, you know, I'm just not into it anymore. And I said, well, that's a lesson too, right? That you can try something, you can give it a shot. And then if you're not into it anymore, you take the lessons you learned and you move on to the next thing. So it was fun. I think a lot of little dreams were kind of sparked. What the favorite one was, they're going to do a hot chocolate stand in the middle of winter in Minnesota, which we thought, I think all the kids are going to go home and do that. It's a great idea. So super That's fun. Great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to hear about them. But to see a child interested in something that's productive, something that's helping grow their character, yeah, their understanding of how the world works, how to deal with people, how to sell things, how to have a plan for something. I loved it. I've been an entrepreneur all my life since I was young. I've always worked for myself because I saw that's a better way of doing things. And you get paid way more usually because you're be able to get all the energies of your labor. But anyway, it was a blessing to see young people getting that vision at a young age. But I know you also talked a little bit about your homeschooling of your own children right here and some of the things you've learned. And this will be an encouragement to a lot of you ladies and families that are homeschooling of things to think about as you're slowly ticking off the subjects and ticking off the content, that sometimes there's some deeper things going on too that you need to be looking for. But talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I just had this epiphany. You know, school is about to begin in Minnesota. And so Rory and I were talking just about our kids and what, you know, curriculums are we going to use this year. And then we talked a little deeper, like Ivor really wants to get into woodworking and Elsie really is interested in fiber arts. And it all of a sudden, it kind of just like lit me up as their homeschool teacher to think, oh, you know what we could do this year is get you to a sheep farm where they're shearing sheep and get you, you know, to find a mentor who's a woodworker that you can go and work with him, you know, every Friday or something like that. So I made a long list of like field trips and, you know, I need to get Elsie then, who's into fiber arts. I need to get her, you know, into a class, or there's like a fiber art studio in the cities that we could go visit. And I just think like for the homeschool mom or for, you know, for the grandparents that want to do something really meaningful with their grandkids, it's kind of like to find that thing that they're already interested in and then get creative. What are the field trips that go along with that? Because that is education. Yeah. And you know, I've done this a number of years and even I was feeling bogged down like, ugh, it's time to hit the books. And it is.
Yeah.
But with great joy when these are your kids' passions.
That's right. No. And that's the beauty of homeschooling. We homeschool as a family too. And it frees you up when you're not in school 7-8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So you can get the education done, but then you can take the time to see where God has gifted them, to see where their natural interests are, and then help start directing them in those directions so they can accomplish the things God put them on the earth to do. And so, but I was excited to just hear that and see that being taught to so many different families this weekend. But we appreciate you all greatly and are thankful for what you're doing. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, so good to have you guys here. I mean, what a joy. We're just so glad to have you here.
And lastly, I'd like to interview Ivor Groves, who is the oldest son of Rory and Becca. And I know that you do sheep. And tell me a little bit about what you do with the sheep and how you take care of them.
Awesome. Yeah, so me with the sheep, I'm out there every day. And basically our setup is we have rotational grazing in our field. And so we used to hay it, but we found that's not very good for the field. It needs some regeneration. So we researched around a little bit and just what we could do, and we found out about rotational grazing. And from there on, we've been splitting the field up into paddocks, and every day I'll go out there and move them from one paddock to another. And so what this does for the field is it gives the manure to regenerate, but then it also allows the field to have time for that regeneration because the sheep do not mow it down to the dirt. And so over the 45-day rotation we have set up, then it allows the field to be back as good as possible. And basically with our sheep, we raise them for meat and for breeding stock. And so, I mean, we have lots of opportunities of people asking for rams or a flock of ewes, or a lot of lamb meat is getting out there more, and people are very interested in all that stuff.
Yeah, that's great. How old are you?
I'm 12 years old. Yes, sir.
Most 12-year-olds aren't doing all that. I wish they were. So tell me, on average, how many baby lambs do they have a year?
Yeah, good question. So on average, you will have about 2 lambs every year, that twins, sometimes triplets, sometimes singletons, but twins are a pretty good average. And from there, I mean, you can just keep building your flock up to however many sheep you want to have. So, yeah.
So is this the main way you kind of contribute to the economy of the family?
Yes, pretty much. I do a lot of raising the animals on our farm. So I do rabbits, goats, pigs, sheep, all this stuff. I'm out there moving them, working with them. I love working with animals. They're good. They're good animals to be around. I've spent a lot of time taming them and working them, and I just really enjoy it. And it puts into our family economy and helps bring out income for our family, and just an enjoyable way to work together.
Yeah, and at 12, being part of that, doesn't that make you feel
totally
grown up and like a
yes,
man?
Totally. Yeah, and now I'm starting to look into the future, and I really want to take sheep as a possible future career along with some other things, but I really enjoy raising them. I've raised a lot of animals, but sheep are just one of those easy animals to maintain, and I found they're great for small farms and smaller operations if you're not planning to break the bank, making a killing. But if you're just planning to make a living, they're great animals to have around.
Well, I hope that's inspiring to all of you, especially the homeschooling families, to consider getting out a little bit if you can. Even on a few acres, you can do so much, and then it gives your children the opportunities to be a part of the family, to have responsibilities, which helps them mature, get character, and just feel like they're productive members of society, which most of the young people in our society today don't have anything to do. And so I think that's half the reason for the discouragement, the obsession with social media and different things, because they realize they don't really have much going on. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed hearing what's going on here in the family farm. To sum it up, it really was about, the whole weekend was about returning to the ancient paths, going back and doing things the way they've been done for thousands of years, and starting to say no to a lot of the technologies that really aren't saving us time. They're devouring our time and not giving us enough time for the things that are most important. And I hope you were inspired a little bit by that. I know we get a lot of emails every week and month about, what do we do to be prepared or be sustainable or be self-sufficient? And so this was just a little taste of that. But anyway, our verse for this week is the verse that was theme of the conference this weekend, Jeremiah 6:16. Stand by the crossroads and look and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is, and walk in it and find rest for your souls. And I hope you'll do that. And until next week, God bless you.